You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
In a high-trust environment is how you get people to do their best work because they feel much more connected to the purpose of their work, and you know, they feel much more ownership when there's a lack of trust. That's just going to inhibit a lot of their ability to be creative, to collaborate, to give feedback.
Hey everyone, it's Jason Baum, Director of Member Experience at DevOps Institute, and this is the Humans of DevOps podcast. Welcome back. Thanks for making it for another week. We are happy to have you. And this week, I'm really excited to be talking about how team managers specifically can significantly improve culture, productivity, and employee satisfaction using a healthy mix of technology, compassion, and forward thinking. And honestly, these skills are more than just for managers, I would think. But as we are now living in our, many people are living in the second year of remote work. And, you know, maybe there's some hybrid sprinkled in there. Maybe we're going back a little bit more, but I think many are still working remotely. This is a very timely podcast episode. So with me to discuss those issues is Dan Pupias. Dan is the CEO and co-founder of Range, a workplace collaboration software that builds high performance culture. He's formerly the head of engineering at Medium and staff software engineer at Google. And in past lives, he's raced snowboards, jumped out of planes, and lived in the jungle. So he's led a pretty boring life. Dan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Awesome. Yeah. As exciting as living in the jungle?
Sure. A little bit. I know, but living in the jungle sounds fun, but it's really living in a clearing that gets kind of muddy and then looking after, you know, people living in tents for 3 months. So it's not as attractive as it sounds.
I'm picturing the Jungle Book in my head. So I don't know, or fighting a lot of mosquitoes, one of the two.
Yeah.
Well, well, thanks for joining us. So let's just dive right in. Are you ready to get human?
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. All right. So let's just start with this. Why is it important for organizations to build a healthy team culture for developers?
Yeah, well, I mean, culture can often seem like a fluffy word that's nice to have it supplied afterwards, but really, you know, you have a culture whether you want it or not, and it's whether you're intentional or not. And as organizations grow, things change and issues, you know, propagate. And if you're not careful, you know, the culture can metastasize and you can end up with a situation where people don't feel respected, don't feel safe, don't take risks, don't, you know, aren't creative and don't communicate well with each other. So really the goal of a manager and an organization is to create a culture where you can achieve your goals. And if you're a modern organization, you need people to, you know, have psychological safety so they can take risks and grow as a, you know, an individual, you know, hit their goals. And, you know, that's why, you know, you should intentionally focus on building culture.
Yeah, I guess when people think of culture, they think of ability to work with their peers, you know, how they, I guess, feelings. But I like that, how you said it's to achieve goals, because I think that's an easier sell sometimes too, right? When you're all focused on the same thing.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of these like people issues that are held up as, like I said, nice to haves, but really they're fundamental and they are tied to business goals. And once you can reframe them, they become a lot easier to support and much more concrete. And it's not just about making people, you know, happy for the sake of being happy. Like being happy means you're more engaged with your work. You're more likely to be loyal and more likely to be retained, and you will actually be more creative and better at your job. So there's a symbiotic relationship between the needs of a worker and the needs of an organization. And it does, you know, we're not living in factories anymore. We're not, you know, cogs in a machine. You know, we need people to be on their, you know, on their most creative and most, you know, kind of inspirational selves. And to do that, we need to create an environment where they can manifest that.
So why do companies choose to not focus on building healthy team culture?
I mean, I think the old school would be that it's seen as a nice to have, that it's not about the work, and, you know, we should focus on goals. And, like, you know, these entitled engineers who want who want this and that, and just asking too much. So I think that's one thing. The second thing is I think fear or uncertainty. They don't really know what it means, so they don't know what they're doing because they're not trained in this. Like, they're trained as engineers or managers or like designers. They're not trained in organizational design or psychology or group behavior or group dynamics, so they just don't know what they're doing. So I think that's why people would not do it. It's like, either they don't believe that it actually has a positive effect on the business, or they just don't know what to do.
Yeah, you bring up culture and someone's going to be like, oh, I'm not having a conversation about a 4-day work week. Like, like they go instantly to like the benefits and that rather than the actual core
I
of
think
what
there's a
you're
lot of,
talking about.
there's a lot of misunderstanding about what culture is. Like, culture is there whether you want it or not. It's essentially the way that you behave and you interact with each other. And one way to measure culture or to observe culture is what you recognize and reward. So if you think of like recognition as attention, what you pay attention to is what you reward. So if you only reward for like engineers, if you're only rewarding launches, that's what will define your culture. And then people who are doing some of the grungy work, keeping the systems running or fixing bugs or handling security issues, they're not getting the attention, and therefore that's out of sight, out of mind.
So, I mean, you just t touched on a couple. Are there additional company culture related issues that developers specifically are facing in 2022?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely unique times. So you mentioned it in the opening around remote work and the pandemic, and so mass rush to remote work has upended many people. Remote work wasn't new. It's been going on for decades, and even in the 2008 financial crisis, remote work really expanded. But it wasn't 100% of the workforce. The 100% of desk workers weren't working remote, which is what we saw kind of like last year. So organizations now are having to figure out how to settle in for the long term instead of just surviving, and that's like causing huge changes. The other thing, which you also mentioned, was like hybrid. So some people are starting to go back to the office, but many people aren't. And a lot of the surveys suggest that a significant portion of the population wants to stay remote at least part time. So what this means is you have a bifurcated workforce where some people are in the office, some people are remote, and that actually amplifies a lot of the issues that people are facing. Then I think the third issue is really about just the long-term effects of the pandemic. So people are feeling isolation, fear, anxiety, like sort of through an all-time high, and that affects our ability to show up for work and our ability to relate to people. So when you're thinking about what a healthy culture is, it's like, how do you support people when family members are sick, or they don't have childcare, or they're just like feeling really burnt out after 2 months in a loft apartment, like I am here, and that changes like how we have to approach work.
Yeah, so work is hard as it is, right? You're already focused on all these business goals, and now you have to focus on individual personalities, and everyone is different, right? That's what defines us as humans, is we are all unique, and have our unique issues. So how like, I mean, specifically for that last issue that you just named, the one that we all are kind of facing, which is this, we all just kind of have been through a major trauma, by many people in the mental health industry have been kind of flagging as, hey, this is a major trauma that we have all just suffered, not just one or two people. And then keeping people on task, focused on the goal at hand, but also providing a stable work environment that is open and receptive to people's issues, whatever they may be, that is an outcome of this. Where do you begin with that?
Yeah, it's super difficult, and I think ultimately there's no one answer, one silver bullet. I think a good starting point is to focus on people's needs. So like, what do people need in order to be successful at work? And just talk to people, to have conversations. Where are they struggling? What's working? What's not working? Both on an individual level and then a team level, and then you can go for there. So some of the things we've been doing at Range, reacting to this, is like, we make sure that we have one extra day off every month. So like, whole company shut down. So this isn't just encouraging people to take vacation. It means that everyone's offline. So there's no email, there's no Slack to catch up on, and that really helps people switch off for a long weekend. We've also layered in a new set of benefits, including therapy support and stipends for to make your home office a little bit nicer, just to make the environment feel like it's changing so it doesn't feel so static. And then we also just think about, you know, how people work. So what type of projects are suitable for someone's mindset at a certain point in time? If they're really struggling, you probably don't want to put them on a really greenfield, abstract project. You want to give them some more like concrete work streams where they can just like churn through tasks and feel a sense of accomplishment. And then when they have, you know, some wins under the belt, maybe you can give them some things that are more, more creative and more greenfield.
Great. And I wanted to talk about windowed work, because this is something that I have not heard of before, but is a term that when we were chatting, you threw that word out. So I would like to dive into that a little bit more. And what are these benefits, these other therapy benefits, such as windowed work?
Yeah. I mean, windowed work is pretty straightforward, really, and I'm sure it would make sense to you. So the old way of working was that you'd be in a factory or at a desk 9 to 5. And if you weren't at your desk, you weren't working. And there's a bunch of reasons why that's bad in the modern day. So the first reason it's bad is that many people have logistical needs, such as childcare, elder care, health things, you know, that don't mean that they can be at a desk 9 to 5. The second thing is that when they are sitting at a desk 9 to 5, they're not actually working 100% utilized. Like we do creative work. And if you think you can sit at a desk 8 hours and be productive for 8 hours, like you're kidding yourself. So it's important to have breaks and, you know, take off. And then the third thing is that different people actually have different energy cycles. So you might have heard of like, are you an owl or are you a lark? And this actually maps to your ability to have different types of cognitive functions at different types of the day. So what you're good at in the morning might be very different from what I'm good at the morning. And like, I might actually be better doing that type of thing at 8 o'clock at night because I'm more of an owl. So having this 9 to 5 work schedule that, you know, that is uniform for everyone just doesn't make sense. In knowledge work, it was designed for factories. So the idea of windowed work is very simple. It's essentially to break up the work week into windows. So instead of it being 9 to 5, 5 days a week, you can structure a schedule that works for you, both your energy and also your logistical needs. So if you want to do a really early morning and do 2 hours, 5 to 7 at home, then go off to the gym for a few hours and then like work in the afternoon and the evening, you know, we should be able to accommodate that from a work schedule. If I have childcare needs on Wednesday morning, I can flag that in my calendar as like a yellow zone. So I'm available for emergencies, but I'm mostly not available. That's like my childcare window. So really it's just about fragmenting the work week to better suit you. So you can actually, you know, have better work-life integration and then be, you know, be more productive as well.
I love that concept. It is true. And like the thing I noticed when moving to working remote, I was remote for a year before the pandemic, is that you get so much more work done at home, I find. Some people do, some people don't. But I found that I was much more focused at task at hand, because you don't have people knocking on your door, coming in, doing whatever, you know, going to get coffee and you get stopped, you know, in the hallway. So when you start adding up all those hours, you realize how many hours you weren't working at work when you're there for 9 to 5. So then all that time goes into the task and take a shorter amount of time.
Or that period in the early afternoon between 1 and 3 where you kind of just stare at your computer and everything goes really slowly. Like, why not just step away, go for a run, or, you know, go to a park and just accept that you're not going to be productive during that time. So, but you're going to be more productive in the evening because that's when your brain comes online.
Yeah, I'm so glad I wasn't the only one that was just staring at my computer from 1 to 3. yeah, no, 100%. And now with, you know, because kids were home from school and, you know, now many are back. But I think in many ways, life was disrupted, but it helped us to prioritize. And I, from a business perspective, I'm wondering, like, you know, how goal setting plays into that when you have this windowed work. I think of teachers, with school, it's almost like teacher's hours when you can go find your, you know, office hours or whatever and kind of need to have something when you can all collaborate at once and you know when everyone's on at the same time. But
I think a lot of the resistance to this level of flexibility is rooted in a lack of trust that people are motivated to do the work that you hired them to do. And that seems like a bigger problem to me than, enforcing a 9-to-5 at the desk. So if you decouple the flexibility from the motivation and then accountability as well, like you hold people accountable for the work they're meant to do and the outcomes they're meant to drive. You motivate them by helping them have a sense of purpose, mastery, and connection with the team and the company, and then you use that as a foundation for building these flexible work situations. And then once you have these flexible work situations, you realize that people aren't always going to be available to respond to Slack 9-to-5. So how do you set up the communication protocols that support that? So we think about this in terms of like cadence and rituals, and how do you support, a lot of asynchronous communication that is more of like a pub sub model, where in the morning I check in and it doesn't need to be synchronously at the same time that you check in. Like if I check in at 9 and you check in at 11, it doesn't matter, but the information gets shared and we just remove the urgency from a lot of the communication, because a lot of the time we don't need an instant response. We don't need us to be like synchronously online. And I don't know, back in 2006, I was working with teams in Zurich and Japan, and like there's no way we could always get online at the same time, so we had to figure out ways of working. So really, it's just using those principles, but applying it to people who may actually just live down the road from you.
Today's episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast is sponsored by Collide. Collide is an endpoint security solution that sends your employees important and timely security recommendations for their Linux, Mac, and Windows devices right inside Slack. Collide is perfect for organizations that care deeply about compliance and security, but don't want to get there by locking down devices to the point where they become unusable. Instead of frustrating your employees, Collide educates them about security and device management while directing them to fix important problems. You can try Collide with all its features on an unlimited number of devices free for 14 days. No credit card required. Visit collide.com/HODP to sign up today. That's Collide, KOLIDE.com/HODP. Enter your email when prompted to receive your free Collide gift bundle after trial activation. And that initial culture, right, that I think is that many businesses have still, it's a culture of mistrust rather than a culture of trust, right? And that I think that's what you're talking about a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the phrase is like a high trust environment, and a high trust environment is how you get people to do their best work, because they feel much more connected to the purpose of their work, and they feel much more ownership. When there's a lack of trust, people don't take risks. They worry about making mistakes. They worry about asking questions, and that's just going to inhibit a lot of their ability to be creative, to collaborate, to give feedback. And then you end up with problems that many people have heard of, like groupthink, or like autocratic decision making. All these problems that emerge in organizations can are rooted in this lack of trust and safety.
What are some additional things that you do to have a culture of trust? I'd be curious to know.
So I think a mental model I really like is from Daniel Coyle's Culture Code, which is, he has a progression. So psychological safety is really well understood now, thanks to Google, but it dates back to the 60s in terms of the research. So Google popularized it, but people still find it a relatively abstract concept. So Daniel Coyle breaks it down, which is that psychological safety requires belonging, a sense of belonging. Belonging requires trust, and then trust requires vulnerability. So you often think that you have to have trust in order to be vulnerable, but it's actually the other way around. You have to exhibit vulnerability in order to gain trust. And this goes to some pretty, base, psychological behaviors, such as like smiling or like showing someone some like body language, which we're not enemies, we're on the same side. Like things like handshakes and all these like micro cues, to create this sense of like they're essentially like micro vulnerability moments that lead to trust and then belonging. So in the remote world, where you don't see people in the elevator or in the coffee, in the coffee kitchen, there's not as much opportunity for these belonging cues, as they're called. So it's actually much harder to build trust. So we think about that as like the foundation, and how do we create these moments of vulnerability? And that might be playing games or having silly check-ins where we share images of what we did over the weekend, or we, fun and play is actually a really good way of having very low stakes vulnerability. Like, it requires vulnerability to laugh and play a game, but and that's like a good way of building culture. But you know, it's just all these touch points throughout the week and throughout the month that we think about. And then we've even done silly things like we did like a spirit week, which required a lot of vulnerability and silliness. And that's how you build that foundation. And then on top of that, people then, you find once they have psychological safety, they take risks, they speak up, they push back on, executive decision making. Like, I love that, like being CEO, that people, question me, like, but that's not a given.
Yeah. No, that's great. Something else that you had mentioned was mind mapping tools. And
mood mapping.
Or I'm sorry, mood mapping. Yeah. And I would love to learn a little bit more about that and how you're using that.
Yeah. So the Range products are essentially an asynchronous check-in tool at the core, which is kind of like a virtual stand-up. And so in the same way that in a virtual stand-up you share, what you did, what you're planning, and then anything that's blocked, we do all that asynchronously. But what we've also added is these sort of like cultural check-ins. And one component is the mood. So it might sound silly, but you select a traffic light, red, yellow, green, and then an emoji that represents your mood. So today I was like a green cowboy, but yesterday I was like yellow, sleepy. And this is important for a couple of reasons. One, it's like a moment of like introspection of like, how am I actually showing up to work today? And that actually is, a powerful moment in itself. But then also sharing it with the team is good context. So when you're remote, you have no idea like how I am, right? And you have all these like little hints through Slack and email or GitHub reviews, and you'll start writing stories like, is Dan pissed off with me? Is Dan upset? Or is Dan being aloof? And if you just know that I just literally haven't slept last night because my daughter was up and I have this yellow Z's emoji, that will like calm a lot of your anxieties. So that's the mood sharing in the moment. And then what we can do is in our tool, we have the mood history. So you can see the aggregate moods for the team over time. And this just helps you understand like how people are faring. And especially in the pandemic, there's been a lot more yellow and red than there was previously. And then we just use that as a signal of like, do we need to change timelines? Do we need to, rebalance work or spend some extra time thinking about like recovery and repair, or like, and if it progresses for extended period of time, then we ask fundamental questions about what we're doing to support the team and ensure that people are able to actually show up, to work as their full selves.
I love that. It's like the DevOps principle, like continuous feedback. Having that
definitely.
Feedback loop is so important. I mean, it's so interesting. So you like your name shows up with the mood next. Like, how do people see your mood? Like, how do they know that Dan is feeling yellow today? By the way, I'm totally stealing this. We have to collaborate offline about how we could do this.
I mean, you could use Range. So when you check.
Yeah, no, I would love to use Range. So we'll have to talk about how.
And then every time, everywhere that check-in shows up, whether it be in Slack or email, like you see the person's mood, and then also the avatar in meetings has a yellow ring, which can be mildly. Stressful, but also it's helpful because it's not masking, it's not really reality. So and it gives you something to talk about that's abstract. So instead of, hey, you seem stressed today, it's like, hey, I noticed you checked in with the yellow emoji, like how are you doing? And it depersonalizes it a little bit, whereas it's really hard to talk about someone that's like, you seem really aggro.
Do you find that people have a hard time initially getting used to it?
Surprisingly not. And what we found is it's like the vulnerability is contagious. So I'm actually surprised that people check in so openly. Like around 10% of users check in red every day, which is kind of interesting.
Wow.
But I think a lot of people think that so we have the three colors, but then we also have the emojis, which allows like some resolution and some differences. So like the difference between like a sunglasses emoji and a grinning emoji, it has like flavor, and it makes it kind of like a fun exercise as well. So it definitely doesn't feel like surveillance or oversight. It's It's very much about sharing with your team, the reality of your experience today.
So, do you ever do anything with that, to steer maybe some experiences that you offer the team? So, if you're getting like 25% red, you're like, hold on, we need to do early happy hour or something. Like, we need to do something to, although maybe you don't want to do early happy hour if everybody's red. But yeah, like, what do you do with that?
We've never had to have a major intervention like that, but we definitely think about, is the pacing too hot? Like, if a project is pacing really fast and there's a launch that's pushing up and everyone's running yellow, like just being intentional about that. And you probably have even without the mood mapping, you probably have a sense that that's going on. But the yellow makes it very, explicit, and it kind of encourages you to take action. So then so you start talking about it. So like, I know everyone's pushing really hard. I really appreciate all your work. It's really important. And let's make sure to take a break when, after launch day. If individuals are red, we sometimes, encourage them to drop down to a 4-day week, using their vacation, to have like some recovery time. So it definitely allows you to create interventions, which I think then basically head off burnout, before it gets too bad, because you have these like various stages of burnout, and if you let it get too bad, it's almost unrecoverable. So if we can, get these early warning signs, I think that can be really valuable.
I love it because what it does is, I'm assuming you have kids based on what you were saying about childcare. So yeah, and so you're nodding. And don't you, I wish my child came with one of those, where we can mood map her. It would certainly make my life easier. But I think hers too, because it would be, acknowledging is sometimes the biggest piece of it is just acknowledging that you feel this way. You don't have to change it. No one's like forcing you to change it, but just, I am yellow today. Everyone knows about it now, and we can address it if we need to address it, or we don't have to address it if we don't.
Yeah, totally. So my eldest daughter, uses green, yellow, red, blue. It's the zones of emotional regulation that comes from her school, and it gives you a language and a
That's
vocabulary
great.
to talk about it that's non-judgmental. So I think what's interesting with their model is that red is both, it basically means out of control, which can be out of control negative or out of control positive. So it doesn't have any judgment in the color. It's just about like how much control you have, essentially. And then blue is sad or slow or sleepy. But yeah, we use that with her every evening, actually. Like, we have a it's kind of funny, we have like a check-in at bedtime, like, how are you feeling, like, and then we have, we can talk about it, and it's just like a really nice way of talking about emotions in a non-judgmental way that doesn't label them as like stigmas, but it's like things you can observe and discuss.
I love that. I think I would be blue every day though, because I'm at least slow or sleepy. I think the majority of the time. At least it feels that
I'm 90% blue in when we do the check-in, for sure. It's just like, I'm
way.
so
Yeah.
exhausted.
I think that's a pandemic. I think pandemic has definitely made it worse too. But yeah, putting on clothes these days, it's life is a struggle. I really appreciate it, Dan. This has been eye-opening, and I want to continue to talk to you about range because I am definitely interested, especially in mood mapping. I feel like we could talk about that all day. I think it's fascinating, and companies need to use this because it's just understanding, getting a pulse check of how people feel is definitely the missing piece. I think nobody's really asking that. They say they want a positive culture. They don't really talk about how you're feeling, though.
I think that's another thing about going back to culture, is like what you talk about and what you acknowledge is like how you define your culture. So if you are transparent and open and actually honest, that's the culture you will create. And if you're reserved and, we don't talk about certain things, that's also the culture you'll create, and that will like eat you alive eventually.
Yeah, well, you're taking a proactive approach by using this, which is great, rather than being reactive, which is, and I don't think anybody wants to be reactive. So that's, or maybe some find it easier, but yeah, I don't think you want to be reactive towards this.
I
Okay,
guess,
so.
I mean, just one final comment. Like, it takes vulnerability to be proactive. It's much
Sure.
easier to be reactive, and you have to take a risk.
Yeah, we had a whole podcast on proactive honesty, And I think in many respects, this is the company being proactively honest and encouraging proactive honesty from employees. And it's like, wow, imagine a world where we can all just be adults. Adults have a hard time with this though. So I shouldn't even say it that way, but this is like the fact that you work on that with your daughter, you know, and we do the same with our daughter, my wife and I. We haven't used the colors. I need to introduce the colors. This is great. But we don't do it enough, I think, as adults, sharing like our moods, even just the basic concept of that starts that conversation and allows for proactive
Definitely.
honesty. Well, okay, so I want to bring it back to the jungle real quick because we always close the show on something a little more personal. But you already shared, first of all, that you race snowboards. So you're not just snowboarding, but you also race.
I used to, yeah, I was in the university race team.
That's awesome. Okay. I can't even balance on one. You jump out of planes. That's something I always wanted to do too.
I skydived for a while before kids. So I did around 100 jumps, which is
Wow.
not a lot by skydiver standards. It's like you either do 1,000 jumps or no, or like two. So I did about 100.
I'm on the always wanted to. And I think I'm just going to say that through to maybe when I'm 80, I'll do it. George Herbert Walker did
It's
it when
pretty.
he was like
I
80.
find it really relaxing. It's like so zen just being up there. It's amazing.
It's relax. The part before it can't be relaxing. That can't be. There's no way that can be relaxing. It's while you're in
No,
mid-flight, right?
the bit before and then the bit after when you pull your parachute, not relaxing, but the bit in the middle,
Yeah.
very relaxing.
Once the parachute's pulled and you know you're coming down and it's okay, now we can relax.
So that's the most dangerous part. Most people injure themselves under a fully open canopy.
Really?
Yeah, because you're still approaching the ground at, say, 35 miles an hour and then low turns. So anyway, it's the time you're closest to the ground as well, so that's why it's most risky.
See, now I can't even do it because now I'm going to be thinking, well, but Dan said that I'm not in the clear just yet. And then you lived in the jungle, which you started off by saying wasn't that it does it sounds more interesting, but I want to hear about it.
Yeah, I worked for an organization called Operation Wallacea, who do biodiversity studies and social engagements around the world. And I worked in Honduras, so I helped run the base camp where, and we had a bunch of scientists and dissertation students out there doing research. So, I made sure people had guides to take them into the jungle, that we had food, that accommodation, that there were like that if there was a medical evacuation, we had to do the medical evacuation. And it's like yeah, 3 months living in this clearing in the jungle.
And in Honduras, a Honduras jungle. Wow, that's okay. What wildlife did you encounter? Anything cool?
Unfortunately not. I mean, not by the camp at least. There were mostly birds. There were people trying to trap large mammals, but with limited success. So it's mostly things like bats and insects and snakes, lots of
Well,
snakes,
stay away from the
spiders,
bats.
scorpions.
Yeah. Cool. Well, yeah, so it wasn't the Jungle Book. I don't know. In my head, I'll still think of it. You know, like you were talking to a bear and I
Yeah,
don't know what else you
no.
do in the jungle. Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a lot of fun talking culture and talking windowed work and mood mapping. And I definitely want to continue the conversation. I want to learn more about range. Why don't you tell everyone where they can find range and anything else that you want to share?
Yeah, thanks for having us on. It was really fun. Yeah, and you can find out about Range at www.range.co. And yeah, we're happy to offer listeners a discount or a free trial. Yeah, so we can figure that out afterwards, maybe.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm going to end this episode the same way I always do, encouraging you to become a member of DevOps Institute to get access to even more great resources just like this one. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and most of all, stay human. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.